Coming up next, it's going to be Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre and open source software with me, Simon Phipps, and my colleague Dan Lynch, live from the UK. This week, we're talking about OwnCloud, a piece of software that lets you be your own Google Drive or Dropbox. You've got to hear what's going on today. Come along and join the show.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Simon Phipps and Dan Lynch. Episode 274, recorded November 27th, 2013. OwnCloud. Welcome to Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre and open source software. I am your host, Simon Phipps, standing in for Randall Schwartz, who is sailing down the Rhone River in Germany this week. Joining me this week is my co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
So what have you been doing with yourself since I last saw you? You still got that that other podcast you do?
Yes. I've been doing multiple podcasts. I'm now doing four podcasts, I think, a week. I don't know. It's like I've said this before, but it's like a DDoS attack I'm attempting on people. So I just try and do as many shows as I can. I'm doing all kinds of things. I've been playing around with Raspberry Pi quite a lot lately. That's fun. And we've just started a UAV group in Liverpool. So drones, basically flying drones. Right. I don't have one at the moment, but we're just learning about them now.
Yeah, I'd like one of those as well. Well, it's two English guys doing Floss Weekly this week because it seems that most of America is chasing turkeys this week. and our subject this week is a piece of cloud software called OwnCloud. And I think you've taken a look at this before, Dan. What do you think of it? What do you want to find out in the show?
Yeah, I mean, I've tried it out a few times. There's lots of things I'd like to ask about it, which we'll get into. I'm interested in things like the client software. I've had some performance issues with some of the client software. So we may just get into my own personal tech support call here, if we're not careful.
Yeah, we've been using it a little bit in some of the communities that I'm in. So I'm going to be interested to find out just how sustainable the community is and what the directions that they're going to take are. So let's bring on our guest, Frank Karliczek, I think your name is. Is that correct, Frank?
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks for having me.
So welcome to Floss Weekly. You're calling in from Germany, I believe, from the south of Germany.
Yeah, exactly. I'm from Stuttgart. And yeah, I have to say that I'm a long-time listener of Floss Weekly, so it's really awesome to be on the show.
It's great to have you on. So you're involved with a project that's called OwnCloud, which I have heard of before. If I hadn't heard of OwnCloud, could you introduce it to me? Tell me what it is, just in a few sentences.
Absolutely. Do you know Dropbox or Google Drive?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm familiar with both of those.
Yeah. So there are services where you can upload your files, your data, and then you can synchronize it between all your different devices, to your desktop, to your phone, to your tablet. And you can also share it with other people, access it from a web interface, and so on. And OwnCloud is very similar. It could be used as a replacement for that services. The differences are that, first of all, it's free software, right? It's completely open source. And the main thing is that you can install it on your own hardware. Because with Dropbox and Google Drive, you have to use the Google and the Dropbox, and in case of Apple iCloud, in case of Microsoft SkyDrive, you have to use their servers. So you have to upload your data to their services to be able to synchronize it and share it and to access your data from all your devices. Whereas with OwnCloud, you can take the software, put it on any hardware, any device that you want, and you have your own private Dropbox. So it runs on a Linux root server, somewhere on the internet. It runs on a web space that you get from somewhere, from university, for example. It runs on your NAS at home, on your router, on your desktop at home, if it's connected to the internet. So the main thing is that it's that you have your data under your control.
Right, right. And you started this project apparently during a conference keynote at some point. Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah, the thing is that I'm a free software and an open source contributor for a long, long time. I'm still involved in KDE for 12 years now. It's a really long, long time. And for KDE, we had a conference in San Diego in the US, and I had the opportunity to give the keynote there. And I launched OwnCloud during this keynote about 4 years ago now.
Right. So what made you want to do that? I mean, what's wrong with Google Drive or with Dropbox?
Yeah. The thing is that in KDE, as you know, we are fighting for a free desktop, like a free operating system that you can run on your laptop, on your desktop, as a normal work machine for a long, long time. And the idea is with free software, obviously, as we all know, that with free software, you know what the software is doing on your machine, what is happening with your data, what your hardware is doing. You can watch the code, you can improve it, and so on. All these great principles of free software. The problem that we saw the last few years was, at least in the Linux community, that a lot of people they use Linux as a workstation operating system with KDE or GNOME on it, and it's all great. But what people do is they read their mails on Gmail, they use Facebook, they use Dropbox, they use all kind of proprietary cloud services, and that's a problem, because if your data is somewhere in the cloud, and if the code that works with your data is also in the cloud, then it's great to have a free desktop, but you don't get any real freedom out of it, because you don't know what's going on with your data, and you don't know how these cloud services are, how they work and how you can improve it and so on. So the idea was that like as a companion service or like additional service to KDE or to other free software operating systems or desktop, you need something like OwnCloud that can run like on the cloud, but in the cloud can also mean on your router, on your root server somewhere. And you can use that as centralized service to synchronize and to share all your files, because only then you have the real freedom, because you know where your data is stored. You can improve the code. You know who has access to the code, right? You can check if there are any backdoors in it or not. So that's basically something that you need for a real free operating system experience.
Right. But, you know, the reason that people use Dropbox or use Google Drive is because they don't want to run their own server and they don't want to carry a laptop. So, how does OwnCloud help improve the freedom of people who are not people who can run their own Linux server?
Yeah, that's a very important point, of course. I mean, the thing is, not everybody is a system administrator, right? I mean, not everybody can run a full web server somewhere on the internet. But with OwnCloud, there are a lot of different options. So, for example, there are already several service providers who offer OwnCloud services, or OwnCloud hosting, basically. And that's already better than Dropbox, because if you don't like one provider, you can take your data and export everything and import something on a different service provider. So you already have the freedom. You see it on the screen. There are a huge list of service providers that offer OwnCloud. So it's already better than Dropbox, because with Dropbox, you have to log in. You use Dropbox or you don't use Dropbox. It's the only choice. Another thing I want to say with OwnCloud is we really made installation and running of OwnCloud really, really easy. So you don't need a lot of Linux or root administration skills. You basically only need to download the OwnCloud zip file from our server. You put it on a web space somewhere. You can put it on a just an FTP. If you have an FTP account somewhere in the university, you unpack it in the directory and then it works. So it's actually very easy to run.
Right, right. Mm. But having it as a hosted service is something that you can set up very easily. Yep. Do you think it's something that even I would be able to do, or is it something that requires, at least a familiarity with setting up a Unix space?
It's super easy. You just you basically unpack it in a directory, then you open your browser, then you type in the address of this web space, then you get a very simple wizard where you have to choose your admin password. You can choose all kind of databases that you want to use, but the default is just a built-in SQLite database, which doesn't need any configuration. You press OK, and then it's running. So it's really, really easy. Obviously, if you want to have more function, if you want a high availability and all kind of fancy backend services, then it's a little bit more work. But out of the box, it's very, very easy. Everyone can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I've used the installer script, and it really is incredibly simple. I can use it, so I'm confident you could use it, Simon. It basically, you just drop the PHP script onto a folder that's accessible from the web, and then it pops up with a button saying, you hit it with the browser, it pops up saying, press this button to install OwnCloud, and actually goes off and downloads everything for you, which is really handy. And then you answer a few questions and tick a few boxes, and it works pretty quickly. And one thing I was going to mention, actually, Frank, when Simon was asking about people not wanting to run their own server, I was quite impressed with the multi-user stuff you've got in there. So, for example, if you have a group of friends or maybe a family is a good example, one of the family's quite techie, they're happy with running a server, the others aren't. Can you tell us a bit about the multi-user features? Because they could set up accounts for their friends or family and run the instance, couldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, when I started OwnCloud 4 years ago, the idea was to really have something that you can run at home very, very easily, as we just discussed. But the thing is, really quickly it became clear that a lot of bigger like organizations and universities and companies also want to have something like that, like a self-hosted Dropbox or Google Drive replacement. Because of that, we really quickly added really powerful user management. So we have supports for user accounts, obviously, but also groups with different permission levels. So it's really, really easy to manage your family, your friends, or your soccer club or something. It's really, really easy. And additionally to that, we have a very powerful LDAP integration. So if you have a university with really thousands of students, it's very easy to connect this to the directory, and then everyone has access. We have installations at universities who have over 100,000 user accounts in one OwnCloud. This works just fine.
Wow, that's amazing. I haven't explored the LDAP stuff. So really, I haven't got that many friends, I'm afraid. 100,000, I'm not going to need that many. So maybe I need to get more popular and then I could make use of that. So, I mean, one thing I noticed as well, which is very cool, is you don't have to use a MySQL database or a Postgres database. And this is something I ran into when I was deploying it, because it will use SQLite, which is just a file, basically, on your system. You don't have to have all the server set up. And that was really cool. I set it up with the SQLite database just to test it out. But now I'm seeing performance issues. I'm wondering if I should move to MySQL and shift the data over or something. Is that something you see a lot from users?
Yeah, I mean, there are, we at OwnCloud, we really want to have software that runs on a very, like a Raspberry Pi, so a really small, small device, just for a few users, just fine. But OwnCloud also should run, like I said, in bigger installations with hundreds of thousands of users. And because of that, we support different databases. So SQLite is the default. Don't have to do any configuration, just press like done and it sets everything up and it just works. Obviously, this doesn't scale to a bigger installation. So if you have, let's say, 5 or 10 users, then we recommend to use MySQL or Postgres. And this is then way, way more scalable and way faster. But we think it's also very good to have something which is doesn't require any knowledge with running a SQL database. So SQLite is still the default.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense. And Simon was just saying, actually, about MariaDB. I mean, I noticed that a lot of hosts still use MySQL, but obviously MariaDB, I presume that would work as well.
Oh, yeah. I was using MySQL. It works perfectly fine with MariaDB. Actually, I myself run it on MariaDB. So it's perfectly fine. It's completely compatible. And works too, of course.
Very cool. Let's talk a bit about how it's built and getting some of the technical stuff then. So is it all in PHP? It looks like it's mostly PHP. Is there anything else going on in there?
The server is written in PHP mainly. Obviously, as you said, we have JavaScript for the web interface, HTML, CSS, but the real logic is PHP. We have desktop syncing clients that work on Mac, Windows, Linux, that run on your sys tray of your operating system. They can synchronize several different directories for offline usage to your desktop. And for that, we use C++ with the Qt library. And then we have the iOS and Android apps that are written in Objective-C and Java, of course.
Mm. And does that add a lot of extra development burden? And obviously, there must be a few people working on this, but having to have a different app for Android and a different app for iOS and... you've got your Windows and your Mac and your Linux desktop clients as well. Are they all using one kind of development environment or ecosystem that you can port between easily?
Well, the desktop clients, the Mac, Windows, Linux desktop clients, they are one code base. So with the use of Qt, it's very easy. You can cross-compile it to different operating systems. That's very... very handy. It's good for us. The mobile apps, they are native, so there are different technologies, completely different code bases. That is some work, of course, but we think that a native app is always gives you always the best experience here. I have to say that we have an awesome community. So OnCloud is of course a community project, and we have, I think, over 150 people who contribute to it in different ways. Some work on a mobile, some work on a desktop. Then we have people who do packaging and QA. So we have a very, very, very active active community. It's been good.
And what kind of requirements are there to run this? You mentioned, I don't need technically a full-blown SQL Server. As you said, I could use SQLite, but obviously I'm going to need something like Apache with PHP. How does it work on other servers like Nginx and other things? Is it okay with those?
Yeah, this is fully supported. Nginx works just fine. We have to you need a decent or new PHP installation. And in PHP nowadays, is the SQLite support is already built in, so no additional requirements. You need some kind of web server. Most people use Apache, but Nginx or a few others who are also supported, this works just fine. In general, we want to avoid to have a lot of external dependencies because the more difficult it is for your people to use it and to run it. And it's the main point behind OwnCloud, right? I mean, it's like as many people as possible should be able to run their own file sync and share backend server, basically. Because if it's really complicated, then you miss the point.
You talked about the desktop clients before, and I've been playing around with OwnCloud for a few months now. And one of the things I've found is, because I've got quite a lot of files, I mean, I suppose it's not a lot of files compared to people who laugh, but I'm trying to sync, say, 100 gigabytes worth of music or something. And I find that, I don't know whether my laptop's not powerful enough for the client or something, but I find that when it's trying to index all of that, it really seems to struggle. And I am still using a SQLite database. And I was wondering, this is just basically my personal technical problems now coming into this. But, I'm struggling to get it to actually work. It keeps kind of crapping out and it can't handle it and so on. Do you see that kind of problem a lot? Is that something that you know, performance issues or so on?
Yeah. I mean, there are different things that you can do. First of all, the database, as we discussed, I mean, if you're really hundreds of gigabytes of data with a lot of files and we have to index all the files, MIME type, thumbnails, and so on. So it is some data that we have to process. So you could try to switch to MySQL. It will definitely be faster. That's one thing. The other thing on the desktop syncing client, We actually made a lot of progress in the last few months. So we will release desktop client 1.5 next week, or I think in 10 days, it's about 10 days, which has a lot of optimization. Actually, the database load that you mentioned, like with indexing all the file changes and so on, this has significantly improved. So you should definitely try that. It will be a way better.
I definitely will give it a try. How do you deal with the syncing and stuff? Are you using something like rsync in the background, or have you written your own code for that kind of thing?
Yeah, the thing is, a lot of people like rsync, and it's great. The problem with rsync is it only works in one direction. But what we really want to have is a bidirectional sync. So you should be able to modify your files on the server or the desktop or mobile and so on. And you should synchronize the changes around. And that's not really possible with rsync. Because of that, we work together with some guys who do a tool called Csync. Csync is a tool that can actually sync bidirectionally. And it actually does that by having a local database that you just mentioned, which tracks and stores all the file changes and modifications that you did. Because of that, we can really sync in both directions. And that's a tool, like friends of us did that, and we used this as a back-end syncing tool. I mean, we improved it a lot over the last 3 years. So we have we improved with custom checksums that are sent from the desktop to the client and so on, modification, timestamps, and all kinds of product extensions, so that the syncing is now faster and more reliable. But that's the basic syncing backend technology that we use, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Obviously, I know rsync's really, really popular. I've used it quite a lot, but you're right. I hadn't thought about that, the kind of the parallel business. Something that I was thinking of as well, I've got to confess, I haven't looked into this, but do you support NoSQL databases like MongoDB, or is that something you might look at in future?
Not yet. No, okay. We support SQLite, we support MySQL, Postgres, Oracle, and MS SQL if you really want to. But no SQL databases yet, no.
Is that something you get asked for a lot? Is that something people would like, or are they happy with the current
SQL? Yeah, sometimes we get questions, and the thing with NoSQL databases is that they are really fast and scalable if you use them in a way how they're designed for. Like you have access them mainly via the primary key, and you have relatively simple queries, and that's great. If you want to do more complex stuff, if you have a lot of joins, a lot of complex queries, then most of the time you have to write them on your own and like a JavaScript on the server, depends on the database. And then it's not so fast anymore. And then the benefit over a real SQL database is not that big. That's just my personal opinion, I'm sure. People have different opinions. I'm sure I will get a lot of emails about, hey, no, you're totally wrong. With this database, it's so much better and so on. I mean, there's all this. People are fans of different technologies. I, for myself, don't see a huge benefit of using a NoSQL database with OwnCloud.
Yeah. Mm. I know as developers we like to think we're above fashion and all the rest of it, but I've got to confess I haven't gotten the whole beauty of the whole NoSQL thing. People for years have been going on to me, CouchDB and then now MongoDB and so on. But I think there's a lot of... I mean, I'm sure it's great for certain applications, but I'm not sure it's great for that every application. It seems to me you've got quite a large code base, presumably, and you've got a lot of stuff going on with the different projects, like your mobile clients, your desktop clients. How many people are working on all of this then?
If you look at our GitHub repository, how many people have access to all the repositories, we have around 150 people who actually contribute code. So it's already quite a large community. Then we have way more people, right? I mean, OwnCloud is available in 50 languages, so we have a lot of people who contribute translations, packaging. We have a lot of testers. We have someone wrote a book about OwnCloud. So we have a lot of people who contribute in different ways. But if you look for the number of code contributors, then it's about 150 at the moment. Yeah.
Right. So that's a pretty awesome community. I've just been looking at the stats on Olo, and your mark there is very high activity, And you seem to be having vast numbers of contributors per month compared with many projects, something like 50 contributors a month. How have you managed to get a community that big together, all contributing at the same time?
Excellent question. It's really difficult. I mean, it's so many things to consider if you want to build up a successful open source project. There are a lot of things and that you have to do or that you shouldn't do. First of all, I think the most important thing that you should do, you should have a product or software that you build which is really useful for people. So a lot of people actually like the idea behind OwnCloud, use it themselves, and then start to contribute to it. I think that's very, very important, because there are some other open source projects who develop software, something which is really good, really powerful, but it's only for like a special, whatever, special purposes. And OwnCloud is something which we think is really useful for a lot of people. First of all, that's very important to attract a big community. And then, of course, you have to be open, you have to be transparent. So like, you have to open up on the roadmap, or all the issue track, the bug track has to be public. All the commits, all the review has to be public. Then public mailing list, IC channel, and so on. So you really have to be as open as possible, and then it's fun for people to contribute. That's very important, I think. Then another thing is that we also have a company founded around OwnCloud. The reason for that is that a lot of companies, they also want to use OwnCloud, but they expect a little bit more than just the zip file. So they expect like official certifications and like some consulting and help with setting it up, and some customizations and support and so on, all kind of enterprise services. And so we have a company around OwnCloud additionally to the community, and this is also something that you have to do right. I mean, if you have a company, you also have to, it has to be fair, right? If someone contributes something to OwnCloud, to a project, then and then this person sees, hey, and the company is taking this away from them, making money out of their work in their free time. So it has to be really, really fair. So we actually invested a lot of time to set this up in a really nice and fair way. And I think it works great so far.
Right. So, I completely agree with that. I think having a level playing field is the number one factor for making sure you have a large open source community join you. I see you're using the Faro GPL as the license for the project.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about why you picked that and how you're managing it? Yeah. You know, whether you have a contributor agreement or whether you have community-owned copyright.
Yeah, the AGPL. I'm a strong believer in the free software principles. So people should have the right to see what a code is doing, should be able to improve it, should really all the important principles of free software open source community. The thing with GPL and LGPL, GPL mainly. You have the right to take it, run it on your own server as a service to the public, and then this is not seen as distributing the software. And if it's not seen as distributing the software in the GPL way, then you don't have to give your changes. You don't have to open source your changes. You can then take OwnCloud, modify it, put it on your server, and you don't have to open source your changes. And that's a huge problem, of course. So,
Is your company also bound by the need to open source your changes? Because I mean, the big challenge of companies that use the AGPL for their software is often companies aggregate copyright with themselves and then use AGPL to make sure they have a monopoly on providing service. Is that what you're doing, or do you have other service providers in your community?
What we actually have, we have a contributor agreement in place that allows us to also release OwnCloud under a different license. So as you just said, some companies, some some customers they want to integrate it with their SAP backend or integrate it with their CRM or whatever customer database or something like that, and they don't want to open source their integration plugin. And because of that, we have a dual licensing option that customers can buy a proprietary version from OwnCloud if they want. But what was really, really important for us was to make this super fair for the community. So we have in the contributor agreement, actually in the same document, we have the guarantee written down that everything that is done by the contributor or what the company contributes to this code is always available under the HGPL license. So we, as we all know, there are some other examples in the open source world. I don't want to say names, but it has something to do with Ubuntu, right? Where there are contributor agreements where someone can take the code and make it from one day to another completely proprietary. And that's not really possible here. So someone who contributes something to OwnCloud under the HGPL license has to guarantee that it always stays HGPL. That's very important.
And what is the governance for your community? Who gets to make decisions? Is it you? Are you king? Or is it a collaborative activity?
It's collaborative. We have a code review process. We develop the code on GitHub. I have to say it's github.com/owncloud. There you can see all the code. And we introduced like a little bit over a year ago a review process. That this means that no one directly commits to the code, not even me or really no one. And if you want to change something, then you have to open a pull request, and then you need like approval from two additional core developers. And it doesn't have to be me, doesn't have to be someone from the company, just someone who is like a long-term contributor to OwnCloud. And if two other core contributors think that this change is good, then it goes into the code. So it's not like we don't have a structure like the Linux kernel, for example, where Linus has the authority to reject basically every patch. We don't have that. I think it's democratic, it's open, but a few other developers have to agree that the change is good. It's also very important for protect our code base against backdoors. I mean, the thing is with OwnCloud, it's a very attractive goal to for someone who wants to build a backdoor into a software, right? Because it would be cool to have a backdoor to the personal data of a lot of users. And we have to make sure that this doesn't happen. And we thought a lot about it, had a lot of discussions. And that's another reason why we have this review process. So basically, you need three core people to make something happen.
Right. So looking at the Olo graphs here, you had a huge increase in contributions at the beginning of 2013. Do you think that was anything to do with the revelations about the NSA getting in everyone's pants?
That's absolutely possible, yeah. I mean, a lot of people are concerned about the latest revelations, right? I mean, it seems that it's really difficult or not possible at all to keep your private stuff private if you use like all the big proprietary cloud services. I think a lot of people see the need to protect their privacy a bit more than before. We saw a lot of more contributors. We saw a lot of new users. A lot of the press was very, we got a lot of good press lately with, hey, this is a great software, you can run it on your machine. If you use like strong SSL encryption, then your data is really safe. So yeah, that's something which is good for us.
Right. So how safe do you think a web folder system like OwnCloud can be against penetration from security services or black hats? Is it ever going to be really safe, or am I best off keeping my files on a thumb drive in my bag?
Well, that's a question, right? I mean, security is always relative and sharp, fortunately. There's no 100%, there's no 100% security. I mean, 100% security would be to as you said, has your data on your thumb drive, put your thumb drive into a safe and never use it, right? And this would be the perfect security. If you want to use it, if you want to share your data with people, if you want to synchronize it to your device, then it's always a compromise. That's unfortunately the case. So there are a lot of different things that are to consider. There is like the encryption of the transfer of the data. So SSL, of course, is strongly recommended, obviously. Then there's the security on the server, like the PHP code itself. As I said, we have a very, very good review process and a lot of clever people. We have a dedicated security team who make sure that everything is safe and secure. Then, of course, the question is what happens with your data if it's synchronized to your client. So if you access it from your iOS device, from your iPhone, then the question is, well, if there's a backdoor in iOS, then of course still someone can still see your data, even if it's right. Perfectly safe on the server. What's with Windows? And so unfortunately, this is a complex question. There are a lot of different attack vectors that you have to be aware of. You have to protect yourself in different ways. I mean, we from OwnCloud, we do the server piece, and we think that we take everything that's possible to make it safe. But I mean, if someone is using it wrong, so for example, without SSL, then that's a problem.
I'm curious. I mean, you were talking about obviously the there are the problems of if you're going to sync your data to somewhere, you've got to send it. You know, that's just like physics, I suppose. But I was curious to know what you thought about unhosted and the unhosted movement. Have you looked at any of that stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. They're actually friends of us. We work together. So OwnCloud is an unhosted remote storage provider. So we work together. Unhosted is a very clever idea. Because the idea is that everything is really on the client or the JavaScript, or that the code is actually always in the browser. So there's no remote code executed, like the servers, they're only there for storing data, accessing data, but all the execution, all the applications that work with the data are local. That's a great idea, and we fully support it. Like I said, we have full support for that in OwnCloud. Unfortunately, it seems to be a bit difficult to write like complex application in pure JavaScript that run on your browser and offline. So unfortunately, there are not a lot of unhosted applications out there at the moment. We work together with the guys, we are friends, to push this forward. But well, at the moment, OwnCloud supports like both approaches. You can have like client-side applications or also server-side applications. So you can extend your own cloud with PHP applications that run on your server, or obviously have a JavaScript web interface. So that's another option that people like. So yeah.
Yeah, and it strikes me there's also a parallel with something like the Freedom Box project, if you've looked at that. I don't know if you have any ties with them or if you've looked at that at all.
Yeah. I mean, we talked to the guys, and it's great. I mean, the idea that they have is awesome. It's a bit similar to OwnCloud. Obviously, they want to build a real box, a real operating system. We concentrate on the application level here. But it's awesome what they do, right? I mean, I wish them all big success. I'm not sure what the current state of their project is. I'm still waiting for the first device that I can buy. But yeah, the idea is perfect. I mean, at the end of the day, and that's really the one of the main motivations for me to start OwnCloud in the first place. I don't want to live in a world where all the data of all the people in the world is stored on 5 or 10 servers, central servers of the internet. That's really crazy. I mean, the internet was designed to be distributed and federated, and we think that applications should work like that. And because of that, I really like the idea of a Freedom Box, where we have like not one server and central server in the US somewhere who manages all the data, but everyone has their own server, like the small devices. And they're all together connected to like a mesh network or something. And that's also something that we want to do with OwnCloud in the future. This is in my opinion, this is really so important for the internet.
Right, right. So have you considered using Tahoe LAFS as a backing storage, which would allow you to have that that distributed mesh storage arrangement, maybe collaboratively with your community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually looked into that a few weeks ago. We don't have integration at the moment, but that's definitely very interesting. I mean, what these guys are doing is awesome. So this is definitely something for the roadmap. Unfortunately, I mean, we get so many feature requests, and we have a big community, but still we can only implement one feature after another. So we don't have this at the moment, but it's a good idea.
So you have been adding features to the new releases, and I know you've got a new release coming up fairly soon on Cloud 6. Do you want to tell us about some of the new features that are in there?
Yeah, OnCloud 6 is scheduled for release at December the 11th, so really soon. And this is a huge milestone for us. I mean, we work on that for 9 months now, I think. We made improvements in all different areas. First of all, the quality. I mean, we fixed so many bugs. We introduced our internal testing system, which really helped us a lot to improve the quality. Then we improved the speed. I mean, something like the external storage system is like over 10 times faster now. It's really, really a big improvement. And then we also added a lot of cool new features. We have like thumbnails previews for files now. Then we have avatar pictures for users, all kinds of improvements. The big thing, the big new feature is probably our what we call OnCloud document. It's a collaborative editing application for rich text for ODF, ODT files. So if you know Google Docs, it's relatively similar. So you can have your documents in your own cloud. You can edit them in the browser. Then with one click, you can share these documents with people on the same server or just some guy where you send a public link to. And this person clicks on the link, has access to the same document. You can together at the same time edit the same document just as Google Docs. And we think this is very cool. This is there are other free software solutions for that, as Etherpad, for example. But most of them, they are really difficult to run. You don't really run an Etherpad server at home. It's just too difficult. But with OnCloud, basically everyone can do that, and that's really big, I think. People love that. We already get a lot of feedback for the betas that we released, and it's a final like very soon. I think this will be huge.
Yeah, it is a really, really cool feature. I had a little play with that on the release candidates and so on, the pre-release versions. It is very, very cool. And I know ODF is close to Simon's heart, obviously. So
absolutely,
he's going to be supporting that. I was just curious if people want to get involved in OnCloud, they want to contribute in some way. Maybe they're a coder. Maybe they want to write documentation. I know you always need people who want to write documentation. There's not many of them around.
Yeah. That's true.
And something else. So what kind of stuff do you need, and how can people come and jump on board and get involved?
Yeah. As I said earlier, I think we are really very open and welcoming community. So I mean, just come to the website, come to the oncloud.org, the main website for the community project. Come to the IRC channel. It's on Freenode called OnCloud, obviously. Go to the GitHub repository, github.com/oncloud, where we have a lot of feature requests, junior jobs listed, and then just start to contribute. I mean, you don't need any permission or anything. Just help, and everyone is really friendly and welcoming, and then you will be part of the community very, very quickly.
Right. Well, we're coming up for the end of the show now, Frank. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about OnCloud or about your company?
I think we covered most of the interesting topics. I mean, if someone has more questions, then just everyone is invited to post it on our mailing list or on the IRC channel. Just ask and contribute if you want. And everyone who is interested in using OwnCloud as a user, I want to welcome everyone to try the latest beta or release candidates. We released a release candidate one later today of OwnCloud 6 and give us feedback and use it. And yeah, just join if you think that it's useful for you.
Excellent. Well, I am required by law to ask you two further questions. The first one, I think I already know the answer to, but I am required to ask you, what is your favorite scripting language?
Ooh, this is an invitation for flame war, right?
Yeah.
Actually, there are different, several scripting languages that I like. I personally like Ruby a lot. That's very nice. JavaScript is very, very powerful nowadays. While PHP might not be the most popular scripting language nowadays, but we use it for the server because it's supported on most web servers on the internet. There are different scripting languages that I like. So I'm sorry, uh-huh. I can't give you one simple answer.
Uh-huh. Well, you're going to have to go one way or the other now. You're going to have to go for the second question, which is Vi or Emacs?
I use Vi for forever. I don't know. From time to time, I try to switch to an IDE. So say, hey, this is all this cool new features, integrated development, blah, blah, blah. And I always switch back to Vi because on the command line with Vi and grep and git, it's so fast. So for me, it's Vi.
right. Well, you know, I can't argue with you about that because these days I only use LibreOffice, and that's why I'm really glad you've added that ODF support, actually. But thank you very much for coming on the show this week, Frank. I hope that a lot of the viewers are going to start using OwnCloud and start providing a service to their community members. Thank you very much for developing that project for us.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So that's it, Dan. What do you think?
I think it's a great project. And I've actually been using OwnCloud quite a bit recently and playing around with it. I was looking at getting a server for home and, you know, one that's not going to be too noisy or consume too much power and get it on there and stuff. And I think for things like the Raspberry Pi and you know, these kind of devices, there could be a real market there for that. And it was interesting that you mentioned that as well.
Yeah. So... We've been getting an OwnCloud instance up and running in the Document Foundation for the LibreOffice community. So we're very pleased that there's the ODF capability coming up in there. And I think that OwnCloud is definitely something that I'd like to see in wider use. I'd like to see it in Freedom Boxes and in plug top devices. Do you think it really stands a chance against Google Drive or any of the alternatives, Dan, or
I think
it's difficult to see.
Yeah. Sorry. Nope. It's okay. Frank's still there. In case you didn't know, Frank's still here. You're seeing the behind the scenes now. I think the challenge is the consumer buy-in. So many people have got Android phones, and Google are going to keep making it easier to use their services, obviously with their Android phones and so on. So I think it's going to be tough, and I think for the average Joe in the street, it's still a challenge. But I think, having used OwnCloud and seen how easy it is to use, I think it could really take off. And maybe if we keep hearing more revelations about the NSA and other things, the demand will be so much that people will realize they have to learn how to administer a server in order to maintain their freedom. Who knows?
Absolutely. Well, that's, you know me, I think that digital rights are the big issue that's going to define society for the future. And on that note, just to wrap up now, this has been a very interesting program. Coming up in the coming weeks, we have some more great shows. Dan is going to be back co-hosting with Aaron, whose birthday it is today on the day of recording.
It is.
And we should have him here to humiliate, really, I think, Dan. But so the next week's program is about Amahi. And Randall is on a cruise on the River Rhone in Germany. So he's actually quite close to our guest today. And then December the 11th, we have Free PBX coming up. And December the 18th, we have Magnolia and Blossom content management system coming up on the show. And then there's going to be a break for Christmas and New Year's until we're back to Arc OS on January the 8th. All of those shows will be recorded same time, same place where we are now. I haven't got any events coming up to plug. I would very much like everybody who's watching to read my column in InfoWorld every Friday and make sure that my editor knows how much you value it. And you're welcome to drop by my website as well if you would like to. I'm next on the road in the new year. How about you, Dan? Do you have anything you need to plug?
I'm struggling to think of things now. Check out things like Linux Outlaws, which is a weekly podcast I do on Tuesdays now, and other shows as well. You can find all of that stuff at danlynch.org, which is on the screen if you're watching the video feed, or just type in danlynch.org and you can find my Twitter and Facebook and all those kind of things on there as well, and come and say hello and we can all be friends.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, thank you, everyone, for watching this Floss Weekly this week. It's been brought to you live from Twit TV, and you are welcome to join us every week for Floss Weekly. This is Simon Phipps and Dan Lynch signing out from the show tonight.